went from leading the gang unit of the Tulsa Police Department to national celebrity on Live PD, one of the highest rated and most controversial shows on cable. But even at the height of his celebrity, Sean Sticks Larkin never quit putting away the bad guys. Until now. Sticks has turned in his badge and his gun, and instead he's picked up a pen. Tonight he's telling his story. Plus, his fellow officers from Live PD stopped by for a reunion and a look back at the week that was policing in America. All happening now on Banfield. You know, it is not often that police officers can chalk up a 250,000 followers on Instagram and Twitter each. But Sean Sticks Larkin has more than that, because he's got thousands of fans on Facebook, too. And he can't walk through an airport without being hounded for autographs. He's a cop. But it's all because of the 4 years he spent on the hit show Live PD. Full disclosure, I worked on Live PD with him, so I know a thing or two behind the scenes. Spoiler, he's a pussycat. But for 25 years on the beat, he put away a lot of bad guys. And he saw a lot of good guys being falsely accused of being bad, namely some fellow officers and even himself. His latest project is Breaking Blue, real-life stories of cops falsely accused. Lieutenant Sean Sticks Larkin, it's really great to see you again. How are you, old friend?
I'm great. I miss you. So it's always a pleasure talking to you, Ashley.
I miss you, too. Okay, before we get to the book, and I can't wait to hear about all the things you've been writing about since I last saw you, let's talk about the fact that Live PD isn't on the air anymore. A lot of people really miss the show. It sure wasn't taken off the air because of bad ratings. It was skyrocketing.
It was. At times, it was the number one cable television show, both on Friday and Saturday night. And, you know, just to plug it, I think it was the number one DVR television show in all of 2019. It's heavily missed. It's missed from those that are fans of law enforcement, even from those that are not. So I can tell you, you know, when I came back to work and out on the streets, even all the bad guys we run into, they themselves were asking, man, when's the show get back on? We miss it, and things like that. So fingers are crossed, you know, maybe sometime here in the near future, maybe this fall, maybe next year. I don't know that it'll be back. It's needed, in my opinion.
So hold on, you're out there on the beat and you're pulling someone over and you're saying, I'm going to search the car. And they're like, hey, when's Live PD coming back? Seriously, that happened?
Dead serious. Yeah, it was a regular conversation. But listen, I'll say this, just like for myself and the other officers that were covered on Live PD, when you're out in these communities and you're dealing with people, even the suspects, you know, because they watched the show. And so it gave us an easy common ground of something to talk about on traffic stops, even a shooting scene. You'll have people out there that want to sit and talk about the show, or they're more likely to come up to you and talk because they got to see you on the show. They saw how you operated. And just to simplify it, they just saw you as a regular person, a human that happens to be a police officer.
Yeah, so police officers have been taking it on the chin. And, it's no surprise to you. It's the whole reason that Live PD was taken off the air. In the wake of the George Floyd killing, there were protests all around the world and in the United States. All of a sudden, it started to be sort of cause non celebre. And that's why, you know, presumably A&E chose to take the show down. Some say, though, however, leaving the show up would have offered even more transparency. Why is there such a disconnect when it comes to that?
You know, this is my personal opinion. I think, the word transparency was a magic word we've heard for several years leading up to what happened last year, being George Floyd and some of the other well-documented incidents. People demand transparency from the police department. They want to see what we're doing. They want dash cams. They want body cams. They want to hold police accountable, as they should. But that also goes for citizens. So it's like they want transparency when it comes to police officers if they're doing something wrong. But we don't want transparency if it comes to citizens doing something wrong. That's forcing us police to do our job. And so there was people that were not fans of it, I guess. And I don't think anything that we could have changed with that show that would still appease everybody and make them happy. The show just showed exactly that. It's like, hey, this is a day in the life of being a police officer across the U.S. We showed large departments. We showed small small departments that were out in the country and things like that. So everybody just got their own view from the comfort of their home of this is the job of being a police officer in the U.S. right now.
So the antithesis to that is that there is a growing feeling across the country that for people of color, it isn't the same experience out there on the street as it is for white Americans who are policed. And they feel as though there's these micro suspicions and microaggressions, and sometimes they're not so micro. So, and I get it. When we see, Officer Chauvin with his knee squeezing the life out of George Floyd sort of before our very eyes, it is hard to soften that anywhere, But in the same sense, do you feel as though the stereotype from Derek Chauvin has just cut a swath right across police all over the country?
Yeah, yes, for sure. I think a lot of it honestly gets down into even the politics. Our country right now is extremely divided. It just is, particularly when it comes to red and blue, Republican and Democrat. And so regardless of what a lot of people's views were of police officers, I think there were a large number of people that particularly on the left that had a strong dislike for former President Donald Trump. And he was very, very vocal about his support of local law enforcement. He had some issues with some of the federal agencies he was not a fan of. But when it came to the American street cop, he was pretty vocal about his support for officers. And so I think what had happened coming into the election last year, the George Floyd incident, is we had some people that previously, although politically they differed from Donald Trump, you can't voice support for law enforcement, or some of them felt. I shouldn't say that's everybody, but a lot of people felt, man, if I'm supporting law enforcement, then that gives the appearance I'm supporting Donald Trump. And so they wanted to separate that or separate anything they had from him. And I think that's really led into the numbers being larger of people that have been vocal about their lack of support for cops.
Yeah, listen, on this program, we highlight some of the work that police officers are doing. Every day it's pretty heroic, and there are a lot of officers who are dying to protect us. They're doing dangerous stuff every day, and it's not making the news much. So, Sticks, correct. I can tell you right now, I get hate mail. I'm called a racist for highlighting some of the jobs that cops are doing. And notwithstanding, I am crushed by the pain and suffering of people of color in America who say the black experience needs, attention. And it does. There needs to be an overhaul. Do you think, though, that police are taking it on the chin for how society is? Meaning you guys are out there, you're cops, you're marital counselors, you're supposed to be sociologists, psychologists, psychiatrists, you're supposed to be judo experts. I think I'm missing about seven different disciplines there. If any of those goes wrong, it's your fault. You're the one. You're the bad guy.
Yeah. Some of the other things you forgot about. We're supposed to be, trauma surgeon, essentially. We're supposed to be doing life-saving measures on everything we go to. We are, counselors for children. We have to know the law as well as, attorneys, those that have gone through law school for years and things like that. So there are a lot of things that are heavily on our backs that we are supposed to know. But we have to make split-second decisions, whereas all these other professions, they have time to evaluate and dig into whatever it is they're working on. The things for police officers happen literally that fast, and a lot of times with very limited information. But we definitely are taking it on the chin right now. I think it's going to be tough for a few more years. I really do, and I think we're going to continue to see crime rates rise. I'm sure there's many factors that go into it, but one of them is the lack of support for law enforcement, the lack of people, whether it's trusting law enforcement or wanting to share information with us. And, it's been heavily documented in the last few months. A lot of police officers are retiring or even resigning from this profession. So you couple that with the low numbers of people applying to get into the profession. It's got some potential for some tough years ahead for us as a country as far as crime goes.
We saw some pictures while you were talking of what I assume was a recruitment effort, or at least some sort of a swearing-in ceremony. There were lots of officers, and there were signs saying, you know, now hiring and recruiting. And yeah, those efforts are really showing a softening. You know, it's a struggle for officers across the country. Let me play something for our audience. Listen, I'm sure a lot of people who are watching right now know exactly who you are, know exactly the work that you do. But this is this one scene where you arrived as a member of the Tulsa gang unit on a shooting. And I think it was a member of the Aryan Brotherhood who'd been shot in the neck. And there's you having to be, you know, a caring, you know, lifesaver to someone like that. So have a look at this. I want to ask you about it on the other side.
Is it an entry wound back there?
He's got some.
Wow.
Yeah. On the left side of the neck, he's got his cracker bars, which are his lightning bolts, which is a symbol that the UAB guys all throw up on themselves.
How you doing, buddy?
So he's lucky as hell because he literally has a through and through the back of his neck that somehow missed his spinal cord.
So you have a job to do when you get there, Styx. It's a guy who's got the tats that you recognize instantly, but at the same time, you have a job to do. You've got to do not only the policing, you got to find out what happened, you got to get the evidence, you got to figure out the way to treat that guy so that you can arrest the guy who shot him, because there's someone else that's still out there. But that's a really tough navigation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, I'm not sure exactly what the statistics are, but I can tell you through my nearly 25 years of being a cop here in Tulsa, the majority of my career was spent chasing criminal gang members. You know, I was a supervisor over the gang unit and the crime gun unit, I think, for a total of a little over 14 years or so. Those that typically end up shot, minus your, you know, horrific mass shootings that happen in public places, but people that typically end up shot, it's their lifestyle that leads to them getting shot. Not saying they deserve to be a victim, but they're involved in gangs, they're involved in drugs, they're doing burglaries, robberies, and things like that. So a lot of times these guys have, you know, criminal pasts. They themselves are criminals, and they don't want to cooperate with the police. Two things. One, that's just the way that it is on the streets. A lot of guys do not cooperate with the police when they're the victims of crime themselves, even though they know exactly who did it. We also know about the problems with having witnesses and these type of crimes coming forward or staying around or wanting to share information. But I assure you, we in law enforcement, we don't care who you are as a victim. If you're the victim of violent crime or crime in general and you cooperate, we have witnesses that cooperate, we're going to go after them every single time.
Yeah, and the guy who's on the screen is white. I know that there's a lot of criticism that many of those people who are being policed live on the show, live PD when it was on, were people of color. And a lot of the criticism said, gosh, you're putting the focus on them at the lowest of their lows and, you know, really highlighting and dehumanizing these people. It's interesting that you bring up the fact that for the most part, many of those people, it's not random. They're living in that kind of an environment where crime is sort of standard up, not for everybody. But how do you equate that criticism when you have the folks that are living that? It may not be the lowest of lows. It may be Tuesday, just their Tuesday.
Right. You know, and that's what Live PD did. It showed, you know, anybody that actually watched the show, I had a discussion with a woman that was a hairdresser here in Tulsa one time, just kind of a friend of a friend. I'd never met her before. And she said she didn't watch the show because she thought it was racist. And so I asked her, I said, what on there did you see that was racist? And I said, was there a comment made by one of us in studio? Was there a comment made by an officer that was covered on the show or anything like that? And eventually I pinpointed her down and she admitted she had never even seen the show, not one time. And it was just what she had heard. And I just explained to her, I said, listen, you know, we're showing law enforcement from Missoula, Montana to Florida to, you know, South Carolina, Oklahoma, California. It's just showing it everywhere. And, you know, when the show first started, a lot of people don't know. Well, as you can see in the footage here, the camera crew rolled with me in Tulsa. You know, I later went on to become an analyst and co-host of the show. But I can tell you firsthand, when we were riding around in the police car with, you know, my partner that was an officer, we've got a field producer with us and a cameraman, they literally cannot say a single thing about what type of call we go to, what type of car do we stop, what do we do. It's part of the contract. They just sit there, and they're there to document, and that is it. So the show itself doesn't pick what the officers do, what type of calls they go to, what part of the city they work in. The police department, you know, makes a decision on who they want to put these camera crews with on their department, and it is what it is. Whatever's going on in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and their ride with this, that's what the viewers are going to see. The show does not get to dictate it. They're not trying to capitalize or highlight, anybody in particular.
Yeah. Okay. So I worked with you for a couple of years, and I don't know why I didn't know how you got your name Styx. I don't know why I didn't ask you. That's just the craziest. So when I come back after the break, I'm going to ask you to explain to me how you got the name Styx. Also going to ask how on earth you got 250,000 followers on the Twitter, 250,000 followers on Insta, and like, I can't even count the number of Facebook fan groups. All right, Styx, coming back with you. And don't forget, the reunion with the other officers is also coming up. My guest tonight rose to national spotlight level on the hit show A&E's Live PD. And this week, Sean Styx Larkin's book, Breaking Blue, Real Life Stories of Cops Falsely Accused, hits the shelves. I am back now with Sean Styx Larkin. And obviously, I was a moron for never having asked you how you got the name Styx. But I did hear a rumor that it's a bit of a dirty story. So can you tell me the PG version of it?
I was going to say it's not appropriate for television. I was doing my internship with the police department, and I had ridden with the same two officers every Friday and Saturday night. Got to know the guys very well. They're both still in the department to this day. They were kind of mentors to me when I was young. And as a ride along, a college student, the only thing I had was a ballistic vest they had provided for me that I wore underneath a shirt and a flashlight because we were at night. No gun, no handcuffs. No self-defense skills, pepper spray, anything like that. Well, I got a little bit cocky, and these guys had gotten a car chase one night, and a gang member had bailed out of a car and took off running, and I chased the guy down. I shouldn't have even gotten out of the car, but I ran after this guy and caught him. And so when one of the other officers caught up, actually had handcuffs, put the guy in custody, he was like, "Hey, great job. You can't do that. Bleep stick." So think of a bad four-letter word in front of the word stick there. And that's what he called me. And so once I got into the police academy, he was one of the firearms instructors there. He just started calling me Stick, which was short for the inappropriate name. And it just out on the street.
Stick, is that the word? Rhymes with hockey puck. And they just shortened it. Aren't you lucky they shortened it?
Yes, absolutely. Because, everybody from the mayor of Tulsa to, obviously the viewers of the show, everybody running, they know me as Stick. So I'm glad it was not the full name to be called for the last 25 years.
Okay, well, let's have some fun then with some of those guys from Tulsa. If they want to call you that, let's show some of them doing some pretty funny work when they, I guess they pulled over a woman who had stolen a car. I think she was suspected of stealing a car. They pulled her over, and then for whatever reason, I'm sure it's not protocol, they put her in the passenger seat, the front seat of the police cruiser, and then they all sort of chatted. I want to show the clip for a minute. This is some of the officers from Tulsa. I'm going to ask you about it on the other side. Take a look.
It was reported as stolen.
Okay.
So you're in possession of it.
What is she doing?
Trying to steal your car.
David 136, suspect just stole my vehicle. It's heading south right there.
I told you guys I didn't steal that car.
You just stole a police car.
No, I'm going to jail for over.
You just stole a police car in front of three police officers.
Now I'm going to jail for something I did.
Well, there we go.
I mean, I used to just like crack up when they'd make these admissions like, now I'm going to jail for something I did. Not only on the body cam in front of three officers, stealing it before their very eyes. It's funny, right? But it is a little bit of a jab back at the Tulsa Police Department if they were calling you the blank stick. And yet they put her in the passenger seat, in the front seat of their cruiser?
Well, now, listen, here in Tulsa, this is how we transport prisoners. We actually keep them in the front seat. We have a few cars that actually are what we call cage cars that have cages in the back. There are actually a lot of police departments across the country that transport their prisoners in the front. I had to explain it on the show numerous times because we would see other agencies that were on the show that did exactly the same. And, you know, Twitter was such a huge part of live PD, the live tweeting that went on. And people would tweet in about it, you know, why are they transporting them in the front seat? And so it was a regular thing we had to address. And it's just different departments have different policies and the way they do things. I personally, I prefer them in the front seat. I like to be able to see them, see what they're doing. I'm very, very lucky. I've never had anybody steal my police car, though.
Yeah, are you ever lucky? Okay, so the body cams and all of the video, I know the body cams don't always tell the full story, and usually the public seizes, you know, clips and thinks, I've seen everything, I know how this played out. And, you know, if you're a legal reporter, you see case files with hours and hours more that completely change the topic. But for you, it's very personal, too, because the reason you wrote the book, Styx, is because you were falsely accused and had to clear your name, and you're not the only one. So give me a bit of a rundown of A, what happened to you, and B, what you wrote about in the book.
Yeah, so first I want to say that the book was actually something Dan Abrams and I started discussing several years ago. And it was written over about a year and a half, and it actually was finished right before COVID happened. So before George Floyd and before, you know, everything that went on law enforcement wise last year, it was just getting ready to go to print. We were hoping to have it out early summer of 2020. But because of COVID, we held off until the world basically got a little more back to normal this year. So just the timing of it coming out had actually nothing to do with what went on the past year. But I myself, in 2010, we had a federal corruption investigation involving Tulsa Police Department, and it involved some officers that I had worked with, that I had supervised, and a handful of officers were actually indicted and ended up in federal court. Through these allegations, my name got brought up, and so I was labeled as an unindicted co-conspirator by the government. The FBI did the investigation. The U.S. Attorney's Office is who prosecuted the case. And I never had a chance to defend myself other than when I took the stand testifying during the case of these other officers. And what we had dealt with were suspects that were facing lengthy prison sentences that were being told, hey, if you got information on dirty cops, we're going to let you go. We're going to drop your case, or we're going to get you out of prison. And I'll just give you an example. This wasn't related to me, but it was part of the investigation that went on. There was a gentleman that was in for a life without parole charge for drug trafficking. He had multiple convictions for drug trafficking. And he made an allegation up against another officer with no evidence whatsoever, nothing. And he was released from prison for this. One of the guys that made an allegation against myself and another officer, he alleged that 5 years earlier, we had kidnapped him. Not a single shred of evidence. He had never told anybody supposedly about this kidnapping in 5 years. But when the government went to him, when he was facing federal drug and firearm charges, he made the allegation up. The officer was never convicted or I was never charged or anything like this. But this guy got to walk free still for it. So the book is filled with other stories, other cops across the country that I was very fortunate to talk with. Directly about the things they went through. Some officers did end up in prison. Others didn't. They were just social media outcries about something they allegedly did wrong. And listen, I'm very sympathetic to anybody who has been falsely accused of a crime. It's wrong. It's wrong if regardless of your race. It's wrong regardless of your gender. And it's wrong regardless of our profession. So it shouldn't happen to anybody out there in the public. It shouldn't happen to us in law enforcement as well.
And it can. I mean, that's interesting when you tell the story. I remember in all my days of covering court, we had a term for it. They're called jailhouse snitches for a reason, and they don't always tell the truth. And often the jury is told, give that weight what you want. So listen, Styx, Breaking Blue, available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. Don't go anywhere, because when we come back, it's the reunion. I have been dying for this, getting you all back together. The band's all back, the Live PD folks. And guess what? Dan Abrams just might. I'm not promising here, but he just might stop by. We're talking Live PD, policing in America. Styx is staying with us, and it's the reunion next. Okay, It is the biggest reunion since Ross and Rachel and Chandler and the rest of them all got back together. You know, we do this every week. The guys from Live PD get together to have a frank and sometimes tough conversation about policing in America. But tonight, Mr. Sean Sticks Larkin is going to join in the mix because we are reuniting the team. Sticks, say hello once again to Danny Brown of the Richland County Sheriff's Department, as well as Sheriff Mark Lamb of Pinal County, Arizona, and Deputy James Craigmile of the Richland County Sheriff's Department. Look at this. This is so great. Oh my, Sticks, did you ever think that this was going to happen?
Man, it's been a long time since I've seen these guys. I follow everybody on social media, so I kind of keep up with them through that. But it's nice to be back on air with everybody.
Danny Brown, what do you think? Does it feel like it used to, except for all the outdoor stuff?
Yeah, the outdoor stuff is great, but getting to see these guys, and a lot of folks don't know from the show, man, we've become friends, and we all have been places together. We've been there. NASCAR race together. It's just great seeing all the guys. It really is.
You know, Lamb, I was looking at you and you had a grin ear to ear there. I know this is like, there is a real brotherhood among you, even though you didn't always work together. A lot of times you were working together in this weird way, the digital way, where you're all popping up from different places in the country, but it's still pretty special.
It is. I love these guys. You know, I think these men right here embody what law enforcement is. You know, Sticks, what he's done in his career. Danny Brown, there's not anybody in this country who doesn't know that he's like super cop. And James, what he's done with the canines. Like, these are true representatives of law enforcement. I'm smiling because I consider them friends and brothers. And I just love what they're all doing. And I love what Sticks is doing with his life. And James, Captain Brown, this is great. I love it. Thank you for bringing us all together.
That's right. That's right. Captain Brown. That was something that happened just as we've been doing the Live PD nights on News Nation. And Craigmile, I know it looks like you just came from the gym, and I know we only have you for a short bit of time because you got to get to the office. But guys, I need you to know that Craigmile like stopped down to do this with us, even though he's running like a crazy schedule. This is really good to see you, James. It's not our normal visit, but this must be pretty good to see the guys again.
It is, yeah. It's always a blessing to see these guys and, you know, get back to what law enforcement is all about. And we appreciate you bringing all of us to the forefront again and giving us a voice where it seems like everybody's choking us out right now. And we greatly appreciate it. And like everybody said, you know, to see Sean with his book and his podcast and everything, I have thoroughly enjoyed listening to him and can't wait to get my hands on his book. You know, Danny Brown, he continues. I could see Danny Brown taking over Sheriff of Richland County whenever Sheriff Lott retires. And I see everybody begging Sheriff Lamb to run for president. So, you know, it just goes to show that the nation just, they resonate with us. We have became a household name, and they trust us, and that's something big for us, is for them, for the nation to trust us and to believe in us. We're extremely fortunate.
It's good to see the four of you up on screen together again, I have to say. But there's definitely one voice missing. And I know that, you know, Dan Abrams, the host of Live PD, he's a big shot and all. And he got real busy, you know, real busy, too busy. And we actually, you know, talked to him a little while ago about his book. And I said, you know, Dan, you know, it would be really great if you came by tonight. And guess what, guys? There's this guy named Dan Abrams. I guess he's just shot off and done his own thing. But have a look at this.
Hey, Ashley, you'd asked me about maybe making a Live PD video. And you know, the truth is that I'm kind of over it. You know, I don't know. I just feel like I'm sort of done. You know, like Live PD, I don't think about it anymore. And there's no Live PD in my world anymore. Not. I hope we can all get together again soon. Sticks, good luck with the book. To the rest of you, keep up the great work you do every day. Have a good one. I miss you guys.
Okay, there you go. So that's all you're going to get. A guy who thinks he's too big for Live PD and he can't get rid of the swag. Sticks, you know, it's funny. When you guys started the show, you and Dan and Tom Morris Jr. were so serious, like all the time. It was so serious. But eventually, you know, you really found this strange gel. And the three of you clicked, and there were these like funny moments, but they would last for just a nanosecond. But it was really kind of a special and unique relationship with Dan, wasn't it?
Yeah, very much so. You know, he and I are still really good friends. We talk regularly. I'm actually going to be in Manhattan next month with some friends, and we've already made dinner plans with him. But everything that the viewers saw on air was genuine. There was nothing fake. There was nothing fabricated. You know, Tom, Dan, and I, we hung out outside of work. We played basketball together. We did dinners together and things like that. But I also say that that's the same type of camaraderie that goes on amongst those of us in law enforcement, just like anybody else in the workplace. You develop these relationships with the people you work with, and we were happy that we could show how genuine and how close we were on air with the viewers.
Well, and it showed. I mean, and that's something that if you follow the Twitter sphere, and boy, is it ever electrified when you guys are on the air doing the show, they felt a real hole in their hearts when you guys left. This was an event for many people, and it went to three nights a week, and there were repeat watchers who would spend all 3 hours. And there's not a lot of TV shows out there where the viewers will stick around for all 3 hours, but they did. And I think that's testament to your personality, Styx, and the guys on the air today. Okay, I want to get to some business here, because, Styx, you're joining in on a thing we do. The guys get together, and we talk about some of the things that happened during the week. So this first one, guys, it comes to us from San Antonio. I want to just sort of get you back up to speed on what happened. The San Antonio Police Department released a surveillance video from an incident in May at the San Antonio Airport, and the officer in question is Officer John Maines. He sees this car driving in the wrong direction, starts to walk over to address the issue. The driver of the car is a guy named Joe Gomez, and I want you to take a look at a couple of different angles if we can show it. Gomez, that driver, gets out of the car, begins to randomly fire a gun in all directions. The bystanders start to see him, look at him firing the gun just randomly in the orange shirt there on the right. The bystanders all take off in a number of different directions. Officer Maines sprints towards the gunman. Let's just remember that, running towards the gunfire, takes cover behind a pillar. And then when the time is right, he takes aim at Gomez, manages to hit him from quite a sizable distance away. Gomez is injured, but not fatally. All right. And then he ends up turning the gun on himself. We're not going to show that part. But, Craig Mull, I want you to jump in because I know you have to leave us soon. I want you to comment on this first. The fact that this guy is an officer on airport parking duty. That officer is airport parking duty, and he runs towards the gunfire. Put that in perspective for me, Craig Mull.
Well, you know, there's no routine call and there's no routine officer out there. It doesn't matter if you're a school resource officer, if you're airport police, if you're parking lot detail. It doesn't matter what your role is. If you're in law enforcement, if you have that badge on, you have a duty to protect the citizens. And he did exactly what he was trained to do in this situation, is to respond to the gunfire, to run towards the gunfire. When everybody else runs away, we run in. And for him to engage him in that moment, you know, he has a lot of things that he's assessing. He's assessing the shooter, if there's anybody else in the car, the people behind him, his background, how far he is in the distance. He's processing all this stuff before he engages the suspect. And to be able to hit the suspect and to stop this suspect's rage of shooting at people is very commendable. And, you know, there's not enough words to say on these law enforcement officers who risk their life every day, who run into this gunfire.
Yeah, I'll say. And just seeing the video, just it's so harrowing. Listen, James Craig Mull, I know that you are, you know, you're squeezed for time. If you can stay over in the break, go for it. If you can't, we totally get it. Policing is serious business. So I'm going to throw it a break. I hope you can pop up after. If you can't, I get it. But when we come back after the break, I want to talk a little bit about this. There's a phenomenon that is bizarre and frightening. It's called suicide by cop. And it happened in Houston. It was really frightening. I'm going to take you to Houston and show you the video. I want you guys to talk to me a little bit about how on earth you train for something like that. It's the big reunion, folks. The guys from Live PD, Danny Brown, James Craig Mull, Mark Lamb, and the one and only Sean Styx Larkin. We're back in a moment. We are back now with Sean Six Larkin, Captain Downey Brown, and Sheriff Mark Lamb, all of Live PD fame. All right, guys, I'm going to go to this other really, really tragic story out of Houston. I mentioned it before the break, and I'll give you a little bit more information now. This is a phenomenon known as suicide by cop. But in Houston, a man walked up to a group of officers who were at a traffic stop, and it had nothing to do with the man. This was a traffic stop. Police were doing their business. This guy just walks up to them, and he literally asks one of the officers to shoot him. I know this happens. It's really amazing for people who don't know your line of work, but I'm going to play you the body cam video. Also want to warn some of our viewers who are a little, find this stuff difficult, that this is disturbing.
You know that? You need something?
Shoot.
Shoot you?
Shoot.
Why are you saying that?
Shoot.
Hey, man, why are you talking like that?
Don't worry,
bro. Bro, why are you talking like that? Get your hands out your pocket.
Don't worry, shoot.
Get your hand out your pocket.
Shoot.
Hey, what's in your hand? Bro, put the gun down. Put the gun down. Put the gun. All right. Cut it.
It's fine.
Captain Downey Brown, that is the reality, isn't it? I mean, unless you see it and we have to freeze it, that's how fast it can go sideways.
Yeah, so we talk all the time about training and responding to situations, how quickly they can go bad. And for us on our side, we actually spend a lot of time on de-escalation, looking at body language if they start blading you, seeing their hands. That's why you see us on the show. You see us in a lot of our own body cam videos where we're asking to see your hands. There's a lot of people out there in the world that need help, that you're not sure what they're going through at that moment in time. Guy walks up and says, shoot him. And your training kicks in to where you're trying to start talking him down or trying to de-escalate the situation. There comes a very quick point to where, as a police officer, you got to make that split second decision to decide if the de-escalation stuff is working or not working. And then if you're going to have to resort to some type of force. Unfortunately, sometimes it goes that way, but we train day in and day out. Spend a lot of time with our officers and our deputies with talking to people and trying to work these things out before they have to turn to some type of force.
I should mention that man, very disturbed, obviously, was able to get a shot off as well. He did fire one shot. Luckily, none of the officers was injured. He did succumb to his injuries later that night in the hospital after this incident, but it's just remarkable to see how fast, again, see that? You have to slow it down to see how fast that gun came up. And a shot did get fired towards, the direction of the officers. So this is interesting because this body cam comes from Houston, and they've got a new policy there, Sheriff Lamb. They're releasing the body cam footage of any officer involved in a shooting within 30 days. And this was the first time this policy was, was kicking in. I got to ask you if it's affected your work, though. Some of the press, obviously, the shootings that have made national headlines, a lot of officers whose lives are over because of being involved in a shooting. Has it changed the way you actually draw your weapon or anybody you know or officers across the country? Are they changing the way they police because they don't want to be the next officer that's, headline number one?
I think it would be naive to say that it doesn't affect some of these guys in their decision making. But I would like to think, like Danny Brown says, training is so important. And in this type of situation, honestly, your training kicks in more than your thought process. You're going back. That's why I always say you will not rise to the occasion. You will only rise to the highest level of your training, which is why training is so important. I can assure you at this moment, these guys went back to their training. They look like they all pulled their guns out when they should have. And I thought they did a really good job addressing this threat as quickly as possible. It gave this guy every opportunity to not make this decision. But in the end, he made a decision that forced these guys to use deadly force. But I would say that there are officers across this country who are hesitating. And it scares me because those will be the guys that will get hurt.
So when we come back after the break, guys, I'm going to take you to Ocean City, Maryland. There was another incident there. It was involving a black teen who was vaping. That's illegal. And the officers who were there tried to get him to stop. He reaches for a backpack. Things do not go well. I'm going to get you guys to analyze it. Let me know your take. Once again, it's the guys from Live PD with Sean Six Larkin joining the fray this week on Policing in America. We are back in a flash. Back now with the guys from Live PD. Nice to see you three all together again. Sean Six Larkin, Captain Danny Brown, and Sheriff Mark Lem. I want to go now to a disturbing story out of Ocean City, Maryland. And I say this seems to be disturbing because the details are still just coming out. The video is pretty tough to watch. There are five officers, all happen to be white. They surround a black teenager when the teenager allegedly refuses orders to stop vaping on the boardwalk, which is illegal there. You're going to see the teen's hands are in the air, and one of the officers tases him, and it sparks a near riot. So take a quick look at some of the video. I want you to see it in real time. So things got really, really tense with the crowd and the officers who were trying to move the crowd away. And then another teenager, there were three friends, of the teen that you just saw tased. Another teenager actually ended up in the fray as well and ended up being tased on top of the first tasing. So take a look at this other quick clip of that second tasing.
Stop resisting! I'm not resisting! You tell me what you're arresting me for!
Okay, so this one's tough. Sean, I'm going to go to you on this one. The first one, apparently the kid was reaching for his backpack, although maybe the officers thought he was reaching for something else. But he sure did seem to be standing there with his hands up. This is one of those where, you know, the public's going to be freaked out about it.
Yeah, and I understand that. And I did notice his hand reaching back towards his backpack. And I'm guessing that's what caused the officer to use, the taser there. Now, I'm not defending the officer's actions out there. I just don't know the whole story, nor does the public. We're just getting a video clip that's jumping in right in the middle of something already going on. And that's one of the things I think why body cams are very beneficial, because it will capture a lot more of the story, everything that leads up to a lot of times just these short clips that, you know, end up making the news. We don't get the full story. So I think we need to be patient and wait to see what all the details were on this.
All right. So, Danny Brown, weigh in on the idea that this all started from the vaping. A lot of people would say, gosh, vaping, that's the incident. Like, why would all of this result from the vaping when the teenager just didn't stop vaping?
Yeah, I agree, actually, with Sean. There's a lot more to the story, a lot more that happened that I think when they do release the body cams, it'll come forward. We respond just like any other police department. We respond to citizens advising us of something going on, something that they want law enforcement to check out. So it's our obligation, kind of our service to those citizens to make sure that we follow up on this stuff. We're going to take every complaint, every little tip seriously. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot more that comes out from all the body cam videos, because some of these phone videos, you can actually see other officers. You're not able to see what's going on behind them and stuff. But we're going to follow up on those complaints. Somebody breaking the law, and people are going to say, yeah, some of these laws are a little bit silly, you know, vaping in public, smoking weed in public, stuff like that. But that's the stuff that we're going to follow up on.
I got to cut it there. I'm just only because I'm out of time, but I could spend another hour with all three of you. Thank you so much, you guys. It's so great to see you, Danny Brown and Mark Lem and Six. Yes, I should give a quick plug. Your book is Breaking Blue, Real Life Stories of Cops Falsely Accused, and I hope that you will all join me again. Thank you, guys. Good to see you all again.
Good to see everybody. Absolutely.